Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State. The best outcomes for treating cancer come from early detection. The James Cancer Diagnostic Center is designed to provide rapid evaluation and a clear diagnosis to those who suspect they have cancer. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/diagnosticcenter.
Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. Close to 400,000 children in the United States are in foster care. Aging out of foster care occurs when youth, ranging in age from 18 to 21, or possibly 26 years old, leave the foster care system without a permanent family. However, they face many challenges once they age out of the foster care system. These include homelessness, employment issues, education issues, and more. We begin our look at the challenges of aging out of foster care with Maggie Stevens, President and CEO of Foster Success, a nonprofit with a mission to hear, support, and empower teens and young adults transitioning out of foster care. Welcome to All Sides, Maggie.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Now, I just mentioned a moment ago that there's more than 350,000 children in foster care in the United States. Is that number pretty steady or has it been increasing?
It's held steady over the years, although I will say across the country, we're starting to see decreases in the number of youth who are entering foster care. And I think a lot of that goes back to some decisions and legislation that were passed back in 2018 through the Family First Prevention Services Act, which really encourages states and provides funding to states to focus on prevention services. So what can we do to support families to reduce the likelihood that children will end up in foster care? And so it's been encouraging as states are leaning into that to start to see some of those numbers trending downward.
So the prevention services are more with the mind of keeping the children in the home, doing something to help on that end of the spectrum rather than jumping into foster care too quickly. Is that what you mean?
Exactly. Yeah. As you know, again, we always look at the safety and security of the child and making sure that it's the right place for them to be and that they can be safe there. But yes, focusing on prevention so that the child can stay in their home rather than entering to a foster care placement.
What factors contribute to, you know, those changing numbers that you're saying with the prevention services? I have to imagine that each case is individually different, right? So what prevention services are needed would vary family to family, right? So it must be hard to figure out exactly how to do that well.
Yeah, I think anyone who chooses to work in this space is a saint and a miracle worker. And because to your point, if you're working with 100 families, there's 100 different situations that they are navigating. And so they might be helping parents find stable employment so that they have steady income, reliable income, so they can maintain housing, so that they can help think through things. They might be helping them access healthcare or mental health supports so that they can, again, provide that stable and supportive housing situation for their family. And then sometimes there's needs for the child, mental health supports, behavioral health supports that the child needs that are beyond what the parent might have access to on a ready basis. And so they're going to help try to connect families with those resources as well.
In your experience, have you seen any sort of ethnic or racial imbalances in the foster care system?
You know, I think that varies from state to state and looking at different things. We, you know, there definitely are racial and ethnic minorities often are overrepresented in the foster care system. But it's, again, each community is going to look a little bit different as you lean into that data.
Yeah. And we're later in the hour. We're talking about Ohio specifically, so we'll ask more information about that. But is nationwide, because you work with more than one state, nationwide, is there a need for more foster parents? I mean, are there enough foster parents out there who are doing this?
I think every state is actively looking to recruit more foster parents. I actually was just in a meeting in DC yesterday, and we have a new leader for the Administration for Children and Families, Assistant Secretary Alex Adams, and he has taken leaning into this mantra of home for every child. And his idea is that we need the ratio of available foster homes and youth who need placement to be one. There has to be one home for every child. And he's actively working based on work he did in Idaho to help states think about how they might achieve that one-to-one ratio for the youth in their state or in their communities rather. And it comes through a number of different things. One is recruiting more families that will be foster families and host these young children, teenagers too, right? We've got the infants that people often think about, but specifically I work a lot with our teenagers. And so finding homes that are willing and able to welcome teens into their home is a whole different challenge that people are thinking about. And so as we're working on, you know, the prevention services also actively working to recruit more families to support these young people.
Well, and then you just mentioned being in Washington. I mean, there's been a lot of programs all across the country that have received federal funding cuts over the past year, just with some changes with the Trump administration. Has the foster care system's federal funding changed at all, or has it been pretty steady but leaned in more to those preventative services, rather, you know?
Yeah, I always say knock on wood, and as of right now, when answering questions like that. But right now, I will say, under the current administration, the funding and the dollars and cents support for directly going to child welfare agencies from the federal government has held fairly steady. What I think will be interesting to see the impact and how things play out are as we look at other programs like reductions in Medicaid or new requirements that are being put in place for families to access Medicaid, SNAP benefits, and some of those other things. Those may impact the number of families that need that prevention support or other supports to prevent their children from engaging in foster care.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about aging out of the foster care system with Maggie Stevens, president and CEO of Foster Success. So the age for aging out of foster care, I mean, it can range depending on the state from 18 to sometimes 26 years old. But 18 is the age when you think of like a child becomes an adult. I'm going to use air quotes around an adult at the age of 18, right?
Yeah.
What are some of the biggest challenges children in the foster care system face when they turn 18? What do you see?
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. Across the board, when somebody turns 18 in foster care, they are a legal adult, right? Mm-hmm. So they have the choice if they want to continue to engage, depending on what's offered in their state and some extended foster care services, or if they don't want to participate in those. And federal funding for those programs goes till 21, as you mentioned. Some other programs provide support and services until 23 and 26, but across the board, and I know you're going to get into this in the next segment, Ohio has the Bridges program that allows young people to stay in extended foster care if they choose until they are 21. But going, you know, kind of back to your question around what are some of those challenges that you might face when you turn 18 in foster care? Some of those challenges mirror what every 18-year-old is facing, right? Mm-hmm. Do I go to college? Do I need to find a job? Do I need to find an apartment? Where do I live? How do I take care of these things? When we start to think about youth who are 18 and aging out of foster care, the complexities of those challenges get a little more complicated because they don't necessarily have that family safety net to lean back on if they need help, if they need support, if they're trying to figure out transportation, housing, and all of those different things as they're moving forward. And that's where if they choose to engage in extended foster care, it can be really supportive. Otherwise, we're hopeful they get connected with other members of their community, other organizations in their community, because figuring it out, adulting's hard, right? And figuring it out by yourself makes it even harder.
So if the child is 18, and the state offers services that allows them to extend that maybe to 21, they have to meet. I'm saying like every state does it differently. This is not a federal system or anything like that. So the way each state handles it and the requirements of what you need to do between the ages of 18 and 21 are probably different. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, to get technical, we consider it like there's federal funding that goes to each state. So it's federally funded, but state administered. And so to your point, that allows the state to put within the guardrails of the federal funding and what state funding might be contributing to it. It allows states to make some decisions about, does the young person have to be working to receive this benefit? Do they need to be in school to receive this benefit? And thinking about those different things. So it might play out a little bit different. The goal is, though, that we're providing support for young people To transition them into independent living, to be self-sufficient, and not literally cutting everything off when they turn 18 and are just trying to figure out, you know, where am I going to sleep tomorrow night?
Yeah. So if they've been in a house with a family and they, for, you know, a lot of their teenage years, and then they turn 18, will that family stop receiving funding? Or if the child participates in certain programs, then the family will continue to receive funding?
It varies again from state to state. If that family chooses to allow that young person to stay there, they may still get some support from the state, but the focus really then starts to look at how can we support that young person. And so the young person could stay in that house if they've been there and the family wants to allow them to continue to stay regardless of what supports they're getting from the state. A lot of times the young person will opt to move to a university residence hall if they're in school, or they may opt to move into an apartment in order to start gaining some of those independent living skills and navigating those things on their own.
Okay, so there's two aspects there. You mentioned going to university housing, so we'll set that aside for a minute. If they go to an apartment, yeah. I can't, the like being 18 to 21, or I can't imagine getting a job that would you'd be able to afford an apartment. I mean, what kind of help is there for this to work?
Yeah, so through the extended foster care programs, that's what that funding is there to do. It can help pay for some or all of the apartment, depending on the situation. It can help. They can help them with transportation needs. It can help them with food. It can help them with some of the job training outside of traditional college, different things along those lines. So there are funds there if they're in the extended foster care programs. They also will have a case manager of sorts. Many states will call them independent living specialists. And these are individuals who are working with that young person, one, to help them think about budgeting. So we have some funds available to pay for housing. What can you afford in this neighborhood that you want to live in? How does that play into what you can afford for if you want to buy a car, or if you want to take care of different things? And so they do have that human support, which is really critical too, side by side with some additional financial support as they're navigating life.
And then I was reading an article about aging out of foster care. And if you end up going to college, then the housing's obvious. You can stay in university housing. But then there is that idea of, like, what if the dorm closes over the holiday break or in the summer? How does the child find a place to go if they don't have a permanent family? Have you run into that happening?
We have. We work with college students in several states and supporting them in a number of different ways. And there's a couple of different things. One, we've worked really closely with colleges to encourage them to think about how they might provide housing just to give stability to that young person so they can stay on campus during breaks. We liken it a lot of times to our colleges who might be hosting international students who don't have someplace to go over the holidays. You know, how do you support those young people in providing them, again, stable housing during this break? And so that's one option. We work closely with colleges. We challenge them to think outside of the box a little bit about how they can support these students. A second, if they do have a relationship with a family, maybe a foster family from when they were in high school, they absolutely could return there, and families often will welcome them home. But that's not the case for everyone. So when those options are exhausted, we work with the young person the department to identify families who might be able to provide short-term respite support for the young person and or help them think about the individuals they've met that they might be able to stay with over the holidays. So it's kind of like putting together the pieces of a puzzle, figuring out what resources are available, what makes sense for that young person in particular, and how do we make sure it's the best situation so that they feel safe and secure during that time.
Now, you're a nonprofit called Foster Success, and so you work with transitioning the young adults out of the foster care system. But how do they find you? I guess I wouldn't know how to find the help, you know?
Yeah, that's a great question. Young people find us through a number of different ways. Often it is somebody within the child welfare system that connects them to us. and helps them understand what resources we can provide for them. We're not their case managers. We're not the state agency. We are a nonprofit, as you said. We work closely with those state agencies, but we help them understand that we're set up differently. We're focused on you differently. So caseworkers is one. Peer connections is another one. So we find that a lot of times when we work with a young person, they are actually our best advertising and telling their peers about who we are. They trust one another more than they trust any of us, right? And so the network that foster youth have with one another, either because they shared a case manager, maybe they were placed in a home together, that network goes pretty deep and they stay connected. So that's another way young people will find us. And then we're just always trying to get the word out through opportunities like this so that community members, if they happen upon somebody who could qualify for our program, might think to refer them to Foster Success. We work with high schools, counselors, social workers. We work with people on college campuses. Again, just building the network so that they know there's a support system. If you meet somebody who aged out of foster care, send them our way and we will do the work to figure out how we can support them in their journey.
We've been speaking with Maggie Stevens, president and CEO of Foster Success, a nonprofit, as I mentioned, with a mission to hear, support, and empower teens and young adults transitioning out of foster care. And Maggie, you're going to join us later when we talk more about what your program does and we hear a success story. But for the moment, we are going to hear about the foster care system here in Ohio. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube, but what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. We're talking about the challenges young people face when they age out of the foster care system. Natalie Leake, the president and CEO of the Providence House, a crisis nursery in Cleveland, made this comment on a recent All Sides that caught our attention.
We've got a huge aging out crisis in foster care in Ohio and nationally.
And we are looking at aging out of the foster care system from a national perspective. We just did that. And now we're going to narrow our focus to the foster care system here in Ohio. Joining us now, we have Kara Wente, director of the Ohio Department of Children and Youth. Welcome to All Sides, Kara.
Thank you for having me today.
Now, we just heard that soundbite where it said we have a crisis of children aging out of foster care in Ohio and nationally. I mean, would you consider it a crisis? Are we having trouble with youth when they turn 18 and where they need to go?
We certainly are experiencing new challenges in the children's service system than we've seen in the past. Mm-hmm. We are fortunate in the state of Ohio that our number is starting to go down. We were over 16,000 kids in custody just when the governor took office in 2019. That number's went down about 2,000 kids, so we're about 14,200. Where the crisis comes in is when we don't have enough services for those kids when they come in to support them or when they age out. Mm. In Ohio, we have about 1,000 kids that age out every year.
Okay. So you said roughly 14,000 children are in Ohio's foster care system as of numbers from last year, right now?
Actually, right now, if you look at our data today. Yep.
Okay. And so roughly 1,000 age out each year. But overall, we were just talking about nationally, the numbers of youth in foster care are declining because of preventative services, where we're trying to stop the need for foster care altogether. Have you been seeing that in your department? I know that you're a newish department, but yeah.
That's right. Yeah. So certainly we are a new department, but our programs are not new and the governor's focus on kids mm-hmm. is not new. So we are fortunate that we've really set a solid foundation. I think when we start to see the number of kids reduce across the state, there are certainly there's a benefit from the prevention services that the federal government funds. So things like multisystemic therapy and motivational interviewing, and that's all really important. Ohio Start's another great example for our parents with substance use disorder. What we're also seeing, though, is a continuum of services. So investing in the expansion of Medicaid for moms and babies, the expansion of home visiting, so we can really try to stabilize those families earlier, get them the resources and supports they need when they need them, rather than waiting till they've hit a crisis and then becoming engaged. So absolutely, prevention is starting to take hold. Certainly, we have some work to do in that space, but we are seeing the benefits.
And so I just mentioned that you're a relatively new department. So you told me before we started, the governor created your department in 2023. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. So where was the foster care system held prior to your department?
Sure. So five departments actually make up. We took programs from five departments. Mm-hmm. Children's Services was at the Ohio Department of Job and Family Services. Mm-hmm. I had the benefit of being over that program when it was there and helping it move over to the Department of Children and Youth. Something that's different about Ohio that people don't always realize, though, is that some states are state supervised and state administered, which means it's state staff going out and making those decisions. In Ohio, we're state supervised, county administered. Mm-hmm. So we work with the 88 county departments of Job and Family Services or Children's Services, depending on their county makeup. And they are actually the boots on the ground doing the work when we get that call or that referral and making those decisions.
Okay. So I just talked about the national situation, and I was saying that, like, every single situation about foster care would be different for each individual family. So you're saying that the state administers this program and then each county is the boots on the ground, but then every single situation that each county deals with has to be different. So how do you manage that from a statewide perspective of that every family situation is different?
Constant communication. So you've hit on the challenge and the opportunity that we have here in Ohio. So certainly we work with our county agencies very closely. We have a good relationship with their directors and our association that really pulls them together. We talk always and often because we are using the same screening guidelines. We have a lot of the foundational supports. One of the things I think that we've done well over the governor's administration is we've set foundational tools that are the same across every county. So kinship supports, making sure that we get to pay grandparents if they take on a child in their custody. Things like that have been built so that we do have some consistency and commonality, but because every area is different, they also know kind of the resources and supports that are there to try to tackle the challenge the family's facing at the time. So I would say to really try to have some consistency, lots of training, lots of conversations, open dialogue that they can reach out to our technical assistance team and it doesn't feel like a gotcha game. That's something we've really worked on over the last 2 years. And then we're constantly looking for new tools and technology to try to help in that space.
If the goal is prevention and maybe trying to avoid a child needing to go to foster care, but, you know, that doesn't always happen. Right. Does Ohio have enough foster care families, parents?
So the answer to that is always going to be no. Mm-hmm. We are very fortunate that we have more than 6,000 foster families that have went through the process to become a foster parent. They're awaiting a child that they would be willing to take into their home. What often happens, though, is that number's kind of deceiving because a lot of times parents will want to take a child that's under the age of one or under the age of five. And we have some foster families that just want to foster. And then we have many foster families that want to foster to adopt. Mm-hmm. So that's a different circumstance when they're going to take that child on. So the number alone is not representative of what we're seeing in the system. Mm-hmm. When we're looking at children, especially 14 and older, there's generally not enough. There's never enough foster families to serve those kids in the way they need it.
And is that to find the foster families, these 6,000 families you're talking about, are they county by county or are they done by your department?
So the foster families are either done by a private agency in some counties actually do take that on. But most of the time it's a private agency that they engage with. They select their private agency or their public agency. Mm-hmm. They do their training. They do a home study. They do the paperwork to go through the process. They give us a lot of information about what they're willing to take on. Would they take on a child with a medical need or that's been exposed to substance use disorder. Any of those things are things we're going to try to gather through that process.
Okay, so in Ohio, when a child ages out of foster care, because that was the focus for bringing you here, was talking about aging out of the foster care system, is that 18? Or because I know we're going to talk about your Bridges program, but sure. Technically speaking, do you age out of foster care at 18 in Ohio?
You age out of foster care at age of 18 unless you participate in our Bridges program, okay. And then we have extended care through the age of 21.
Okay, so tell me about Bridges and what is offered and what is required of that 18, between 18 and 21 year old.
Sure.
I'm going to put adult in air quotes, right?
Yes, yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Age, chronologically, they're an adult. Yes. So Bridges was created back in 2018. Mm-hmm. It is a program that's really focused. It solely focuses on children aging out 18 to 21 to provide them financial resources, case management resources, really to try to help them during that time period become self-sufficient with additional support when that foster family may no longer be involved. Hopefully they are. We want them to be. We always encourage that, but those circumstances that generally look different. To be eligible for Bridges, the child obviously has to elect to be a part of the program. It is voluntary. And then they have to either be working 80 hours, they have to be attending secondary or post-secondary education. They may have a medical issue or a different barrier that could be signed off on. But those are the general criteria for a child that's turning 18 to elect to go into Bridges.
Working 80 hours a month or what?
A month.
Okay. I was like 80 hours. Oh, no. So working 80 hours a month. So they have to get a job of some sort and then and or be going to school.
Going to school.
Right. Okay. So if they get a job, does the Bridges program help them find housing and or, I guess, stay with that foster family?
That's exactly right. So mm-hmm. Bridges is there to kind of provide those wraparound supports. Mm-hmm. So it could be help with transportation. It could be help with food. Housing is obviously a big concern to many of our children aging out. I would say it's probably one of the number one concerns we hear. Once they have housing figured out, then they move right into what am I going to do next?
Mm-hmm. And you said it's about 1,000 a year age out of. So,
that's right.
So of that 1,000, do you know how many go to school versus get a job?
What we do know is that we are increasing our graduation rate for high school and mm-hmm. our children that are exposed to foster care. And I think that's a really important point to start from, that we had 579 kids last year graduate high school. That's higher. That's increasing. That's 3.5% higher than the year before, and that's an increase from the year prior. We have to get these kids attending school and graduating high school before we can get them to focus on really going to college. The number of kids going to college is much lower for our kids in foster care than it is compared to our kids that don't experience foster care. But certainly we're seeing that grow. We're actually looking at programs around how do we better connect these kids earlier so they know that it's an option. Mm. Because so often the reason they're not going is because no one ever told them they could.
Mm. Okay. And there are some states that I read that offer support services up to age 26. Is that possible in Ohio or is it just 21?
It is. So it is definitely possible. It's something that requires additional funding. So I know that funding is a concern across all programs. One of the things that we're looking at is what can we afford? Mm-hmm. Right now, our program that goes up to age 21 is really facing a financial crisis, if you will. We're continuing to see costs go up for placements. We're seeing more behavioral health issues that we're trying to support. So before we expand services, we want to make sure that we're doing a really good job in those children under 21. But we are constantly looking at how much more money would it take? What would it look like? But right now, it's not financially viable in the state we're in today.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about aging out of the foster care system here in Ohio with Kara Wente, director of the Ohio Department of Children and Youth. Okay, so let's talk about that funding. Are we talking that there's an issue with needing more state funding? Are we talking federal funding? What are you talking about when you say that you need more money?
As the leader of a state agency, the answer is always both. We need both.
Yeah.
We need more money at the federal level that we can then match with our state funds mm-hmm. because in children's services, it's kind of a both and. They generally give a portion of the money and then the state has to come up with a portion of it as well. What we have seen over the last 7 years, Governor DeWine has tripled the amount of money that our children's services agencies receive to support our kids in foster care. Mm-hmm. So it was like $60 million when we started. We're over $180 million now. Mm-hmm. But that is really a small portion compared to what the total budget is. So yes, to both of those, yes to more state funding and yes to more federal funding, especially if we want to look at expanding.
Okay. So prior to the Bridges program being created, what were youth who turned 18, did they not really have as much help, or was it kind of county by county whether they had any help or not?
It definitely always varies by county, because mm-hmm. some counties have additional local community resources that they can deploy. So yes, the reason we wanted to move toward Bridges was to have that consistency and continuity for all kids mm-hmm. that were turning 18. And we just really felt like that was something we needed to build at the state level. What we often do is try to set a foundation, and then we let our communities build on top of it.
So you said about 1,000 a year age out of foster care. Do they all go into Bridges, or do some of them just kind of disappear? I don't know. Yeah.
So you would think that there'd be about 3,000 children that could be in Bridges. Mm-hmm. Right now, we have 935 children participating. Mm-hmm. When you start to look at what are these children doing, you asked a great question earlier about what's the number? How many kids are, you know, taking mm-hmm. advantage of going to school? We have the Education and Training Voucher Program, which I know you've talked to Foster Success about, and you're going to hear more about, I'm sure, later. We have about 303 students that are taking advantage of that $5,000 scholarship, if you will, to support them going to school. That's great. It's still not enough, obviously, mm-hmm. of those children taking advantage of it. And we got to figure out how to break down those barriers.
Yeah, so that was my next question. So this program is called the Ohio Education and Training Voucher Program. Do you call it like ETV?
Everything is an acronym. Yes, you're absolutely
okay,
right.
Okay, so the ETV program, it's designed to help foster youth attend college. So it is $5,000 a year, which we know is not what college costs. But tell me about how the program works and what that $5,000 can be used for.
So this is a very specific program that gets federally funded and state match. And the child just has to be under the age of 26, because we know oftentimes when they go to school, it does take longer than 4 years, especially mm-hmm. if you're facing previous trauma history and barriers. So this program provides financial and academic support. It also provides human support with a liaison or a counselor, depending on what they call it in their area. This is really targeted at children that are going to a college, a university, or a vocational educational program, mm-hmm. which I know there's conversations at the federal level to more fully expand to meet the needs of our kids, as we're seeing everyone not always go to college. So certainly this is targeted at children turning 18 that are looking at exploring one of those opportunities, and they can get that $5,000 per academic year, and it's for up to 5 years.
So I read an article from the Ohio Newsroom that did a story about this ETV program, and basically said a relatively small number of people are enrolled. Why is that? Do they not know it exists, or do they not see the benefit? Why do we have a low number enrolled in it?
I think it's both of those things. They don't know it exists. They may have a barrier. And oftentimes, more than anything, our foster youth just don't have someone telling them that they should. Mm. They don't have that encouragement. I think we underestimate all of these children are experiencing very similar circumstances in the sense of the transitions they're making, mm-hmm. graduating high school, thinking about what's next, figuring out who their friend group's going to be after they're no longer in that cohort of high school classes. But if you don't have a parent or an adult in your life or a coach or a mentor, you may not have anybody to discuss that with that's mm-hmm. going to throw out options that are different than what you've seen. Mm-hmm. So oftentimes we will have foster youth that haven't seen anyone go to college. Mm-hmm. They are often considered first generation. And that's hard if you don't see that in your future. So that is something we're really trying to have conversations around. How do we do a better job of exposing them not only to ETV, but to the options that they could really move forward with as far as a job? Mm-hmm. It's exposure.
We were talking earlier about like the housing element and housing, how important housing is. And so if you end up deciding to go to school, I would $5,000 won't pay tuition and room and board and everything. So do you help? Does the Bridges program help students figure out how to get scholarships or find other money elsewhere, or tell them they can have a job and go to school at the same time?
That's right. So we're talking about all the options from Pell Grants to how to help you balance your work schedule with your class schedule, leveraging the ETV program. There are often other scholarships that our foster youth are eligible for if we talk to them early enough mm-hmm. and have that conversation. So we are in conversations with our Department of Higher Education to see how can we make better connections? How can we push them in high school to have conversations around, especially with our foster youth, there are foster care liaisons in every school mm-hmm. district. How can we ask them to help us make sure these kids are getting to school and figuring out the barriers to why they're not if they're not? Mm-hmm. So it really is an all hands on deck conversation mm-hmm. that we just have to, it's different in every school district and every community. So part of it is just building the awareness and having the conversation around how people can help, because oftentimes they think, well, I don't have the time to be a foster parent, so I don't know how I can engage. Mm. There are lots of ways you can get involved in these children's lives to be that adult that maybe they didn't have care about them before.
Do you have any experience in knowing how many foster families are willing to keep a child past 18, be that like home base for them for those aging out years?
I don't have the data here, and I don't know that we could necessarily get it. Something we should be looking at. But oftentimes what we hear from our foster youth is that that's not necessarily what's happening consistently. Mm. And when we don't have that happening consistently, those youth will often revert back to the family that they may have been removed from. Mm. And we know that can be, if the family hasn't been stabilized, a really detrimental time period at a very formative point in this child's life. So what we're consistently trying to find are new ways to help create that community earlier for our foster youth, so that when the family can stabilize, if they can go back, that's great. That's awesome. That's what we ultimately want. But if they can't, they have a network of individuals that they can call when they get a flat tire, when their windshield breaks, when they've had a bad day, any of those things. And if you don't have that person, everything else just compounds. Mm-hmm.
I think your answer to this final question is just going to be more money. But if you had a magic wand and you could make the aging out of foster care easier or better, what would you do to change it? What's the biggest change that you would make?
Well, because you've challenged me, I'm not going to say more money. Because yeah. It's not actually money. Mm-hmm. It's people.
Yeah.
It's adults that are willing to put themselves out there to be there for these kids. Mm-hmm. So that could be in the form of a foster parent, a respite parent, a mentor, a coach, an adult that realizes there's a kid that's been through a really trying time. Mm-hmm. But it's finding ways for adults to engage with these kids. And oftentimes there are adults that want to, but we have to give them the opportunity, and we have to figure out how to be able to reach in and for those kids to reach out and to have that conversation. But it really is about people.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. We've been speaking with Kara Wente, the director of the Ohio Department of Children and Youth. Thanks for being on All Sides.
Thanks for having me.
And coming up, we're going to talk with a young woman who has exited Ohio's foster care system. And that is when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News. You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. We're talking about life for young people when they age out of the foster care system. The Ohio Education and Training Voucher Program, known as ETV, is a federally funded program giving young adults who have left the foster care system funds to pay for college and trade school expenses. Still with us, we have Maggie Stevens, President and CEO of Foster Success, a nonprofit with a mission to hear, support, and empower teens and young adults transitioning out of foster care. Thanks again for joining us today, Maggie.
Thank you for continuing the conversation.
Yes. And joining us now is Adriana, who is a Foster Success Program participant and studying nursing at Kent State. Welcome to All Sides, Adriana.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here today.
So can you tell me how long you were in Ohio's foster care system?
I was actually in the foster care system for 2.5 years. I was removed from the home shortly after my 16th birthday.
Okay, so So if you entered the foster care system at 16, you probably had to start thinking about exiting the foster care system pretty quickly, because that was just, you know, around the age of 18-ish. Did you feel prepared for the idea of becoming an adult?
You know, aging out is often described as like a cliff. You lose that safety net feel when you're in the system. And then you're left feeling like there's nowhere to go. You're not really sure where to start when looking for a place to live or getting a car. You aren't really prepared transitioning. You really start to gain momentum once you start meeting people, gaining connections, and, you know, asking your friends and your peers, how do you get started when they have the things that you want as far as housing? So aging out when I was 18, I was not prepared. It took me a while to gain my momentum and figure things out.
Yeah. So Ohio offers what's called the Bridges program, which is to help between the ages of 18 and 21. Is that something that you were familiar with, or did you know anything about it?
I knew nothing about the Bridges program, nothing at all. You know, and that's one of the things I really want to advocate for moving forward in my own career is actually giving foster youth the information that they need to be successful in the outside world, because you're not going to always have a foster family to lean on. And they really do kind of just throw you out there. So I wish I had the information about the Bridges program. It would have probably made things a lot easier for me. But I persevered either way. So I'm very thankful for that. But I did not know about the Bridges program.
Did the family that you were with, that you were placed with when you were 16, did you stay with them through past the age of 18? Or was it kind of just understood that when you were 18, you were going to be age out of the program?
Oh, I think it was pretty much understood that, you know, I actually wanted to be on my own. It's extremely uncomfortable. You know, at 16, you are already conditioned, you know, with your family. You've already been with them for X many years. So to be placed with a, you know, essentially a random set of people, you feel very out of place. Mm-hmm. So I was extremely uncomfortable and I wanted to be on my own. Even though it was 2.5 years, I still felt disconnected. And I just yearned for my own, just finding my own way, because I knew what I wanted my life to look like. And although I'm thankful for that experience, I was just ready to be on my own and start something new for myself.
How did you learn about Foster Success and the ETV program?
Just circling back to that peer-to-peer support, mm-hmm. I was able to make a really good friend, and she's still my good friend. She actually told me about the ETV program and what they offered. She herself was a foster care youth, and she discovered that program. I'm not really sure how she did, but she shared with me everything they did for her, put her through school. She graduated college, and I said, there's no way I can't do that. I've always wanted to further my education and become something. So when I found out there was a program that would help me do that, it was a no-brainer for me to take the steps to get the ball rolling.
So you're currently studying nursing at Kent State, right?
Yes, I am.
And so how has this program supported you? My understanding is it's about $5,000 toward your tuition. So how are you using the ETV program right now?
I am taking full advantage of everything that they offer. They have not only supported with, you know, tuition, but, you know, it's almost like a family at ETV. They are really for you. I have been able to connect with a really good representative. Her name's Kelsey. She has been like my backbone this entire time throughout school. I've been with them for 3 years at ETV. And, you know, she goes above and beyond. She makes sure, you know, if I need a tutor, she sends me the information that my school has available for us there. She looks up scholarships for me, sends me what's available, what's, you know, most aligned for me. So they are, and she does all that without me even having to ask. So it's very individualized, and not only, you know, they help with the tuition, but they take away that mental anguish of, you know, having to work more than one job just to stay afloat. You know, as an adult, you have other things that you have to pay for it instead of just school. So they really took that burden off of my back, and I am always so grateful for them. That's $5,000 is a lot. That's a lot.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the lives of young people after exiting the foster care system in Ohio with Adriana, a Foster Success Program participant studying nursing at Kent State. And still with us is Maggie Stevens, president and CEO of Foster Success. Maggie, I wanted to bring you back into the conversation here with Adriana talking about Kelsey helping her. Is that someone who works for you for through Foster Success? Can you tell me more about that?
Yeah, Kelsey, we have amazing staff across the country who are on the ground and working with students just like Adriana to coach them through their college experience. And really, you know, I love hearing Adriana say it's very individualized. That's our goal. We want to make sure that every young person feels like we're helping them on the path that they're creating. And that's exactly what Kelsey does. We encourage young people to meet with their coaches at least once a month. They're available if they need them more. To really just answer those questions, find those resources, and navigate life.
So this ETV program, I'm understanding it, is it administered federally by the states, or because Adriana makes it seem like you are administering it, but can you tell me more where does the money come from? Who does the paperwork?
Yeah, so it's I think you mentioned earlier it's a federally funded program, but it's state administered, and so we contract with the Ohio Department of Children and Youth to be a vendor and to administer the program for them. So just like any other state contract, we bid on it. We share what we could do. We were selected through that process. And now, as Adriana mentioned, actually her time in ETV, we've been administering the program. This is our third year working in Ohio and supporting students there. And so we partner with the department to verify eligibility for anyone who applies for the program. Assuming that they are qualified, we get the documents from the campus to make sure that they're enrolled. We take care of getting the dollars, the checks sent to the university or whomever, you know, the dollars are due to. And then again, we provide that coaching support beyond just the dollars and cents and the administrative backbone for the program.
And I talked earlier with the director of the Department of Children and Youth, and she was saying that not as many people are using ETV as you would think, or that you're eligible for it, and they're trying to get the numbers up. But what do you see from your perspective of why people are, there's not enough, why youth are not using it?
Yeah, I mean, I think one, there's always an awareness issue, right? I think it's great that Adriana's friend told her about the program and got her connected to us. And that's, we rely on young people to tell everyone that might be eligible about the program, but we have to do more than that. And so in addition to having contacts on college campuses across the states, who, if they happen upon somebody that because of financial aid forms, they learn that they were in foster care, we ask them to send them our way to see if they would qualify for ETV. We're also trying to do more work with high school social workers, high school counselors, so that they are aware of the programs. And just like we want the case managers to let young people know about the opportunities for college and support in going to college, we want to make sure that those high school teachers, counselors, social workers know about the resources so that as high school students are making choices, they can be informed of this resource that can help make college a possibility for them.
Adriana, let me ask you, if not for your friend, you said you would have never heard of the program. How can the state of Ohio make more kids aware? What do you think?
Just from my own personal experience, like I mentioned before, when I was in the foster care system, they didn't tell me anything about that. They really never even mentioned, you know, furthering my education. So I think maybe whenever you have troubled youth or, you know, endangered youth, you really nourish them. And if you want them to be successful and not fall through the cracks, you have to tell them about what is available and how accessible it really is. Maybe put a brochure in their, you know, aging out packet, maybe even develop an aging out packet of things to get started, you know, how to find housing, how to get utilities in your name, you know, what the things are that are going to help you stay afloat in society. Maybe encourage, I don't know who's in charge of that, but maybe that would be that's something I would consider, is maybe a little brochure about, you know, the things to do and the things you'll need to be a, I don't know, contributing citizen.
So the Adriana, what are your long-term plans? You're studying nursing right now. You're using this money through ETV. You're working with the Foster Success you said you're working with Kelsey. What's your goals for the future?
My heart's on nursing, but given this opportunity, I'm really enjoying the impact that this has. So, you know, I would love to continue to work with ETV in the future, maybe continue to be an advocate for the young people. But as far as nursing, I would like to get my doctorate in nursing, eventually have my own clinic to continue to support people in other ways. You know, it's not identical the ways that I was supported through ETV, but, you know, encouraging health and helping people take care of themselves is something I have always wanted to do. And nursing is a driving factor and one of the fastest ways to help me achieve my goal there.
Well, I want to thank you so much for coming on today and telling us your story. We've been speaking with Adriana, a Foster Success Program participant who's studying nursing at Kent. Thank you so much for your time today. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks. Have a great day.
And we've also been speaking with Maggie Stevens, president and CEO of Foster Success, a nonprofit with a mission to hear, support, and empower teens and young adults transitioning out of the foster care system. Maggie, thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
And you've been listening to All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. If you missed any part of today's show, listen back at our website, wosu.org/allsides. Subscribe to our podcast. Every episode is available in our mobile app. Thanks for joining us. I'm Amy Jurevich on 89.7 NPR News.
This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube, but what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.